My name is Gina Gutierrez. I'm a fifth generation dairy farmer from central Mexico. I'm just about 100 kilometers north from Mexico City. I farm with my dad, who's a vet, my brother, an agronomist. I take care of the financial administration of the farm. We have 420 cows, milking three times a day, with 36 liters per cow per day right now.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And you're here to accept a prize, so congratulations. Tell me about that.
Thank you, Tom. Yes, I was awarded with the Kleckner Award from the Global Farmer Network. Very honored, because today I'm still wondering how the board chose me over so many amazing farmers that are part of Global Farmer Network, because there are people doing great, great things. But this just is inspiring me, because they chose me for something, and that motivates me to keep on going on what I'm doing, because I'm not only a farmer, I'm also an advocate. And I'm on social media with 30,000 followers, and that motivates me and gives me a bigger platform to send my message and share my story.
I'm going to get into that, but I want to know a little bit more about the Kleckner Prize. What are the what do they look at to award this, to present this prize?
I guess it's leadership, and maybe I'm not the right person just yet, but maybe they see a lot of potential in me, because yes, I am on top of many young people in Mexico that we are involved in farming, but not necessarily getting out there and engaging with authorities or consumers or other farmers. And maybe that's the Kleckner Awards, like I said, encouraging me to invite more people to be a leader of dairy farmers and young dairy farmers, and especially women as well, because there are very few women farmers in Mexico. It's dairy, just I'm like one in maybe 10 that I know, and that's a lot, maybe seven or six even, women dairy farmers. And I'm trying to invite more people in and to join and to communicate and share our stories, because we all have a different story. Even though we're all in dairy or you're in corn, we all have different ways of sharing a story, and we have different insights and perspectives. And I think that is worth sharing.
And you do share a lot. You're on social media. You're heavily engaged. Why?
Well, I've always been an advocate. You know, I have defended dairy all my life. And then I was invited to Colombia in 2015 to talk about family operations, because they wanted a female farmer and somebody that was in business for a long time. And since I'm fifth generation, they said, "You're the one that we want to hear about." And I went there, and after my talk, in the Q&A section, a guy asked me, "Well, yes, you know, we have our farms," and I talked about generation transition and how having a will and having all your paperwork and in line and very tight, keep it tight in the farm and all. And he asked me, "Yeah, we can all do that. But what about the people out there? You know, that people don't really know what farming is about. They don't know even what a cow is. You know, milk is just milk. It's something that you drink in the morning, maybe, and something that maybe your doctor will prescribe for a calcium source, or just the doctor that will tell you, cut dairy. You know, what can we do?" And I say, "Well, we first have to talk about what we do in the farm. And in order to talk about, we have to do better. We have to be better at it, because there are a lot of ways to improve of our operations, and people need to know that farmers really take care of life. And dairy farmers especially, I love this, because we see cows giving birth every day while we are planting our crops and see them growing every single day. So we're very close to life, and people really don't know that. So I went back from Colombia and I had an accident. I twisted my ankle very badly. I had to stop going to a farm for a few days. And, you know, I was in bed and I realized I should do that because I got tired of sharing what people here in the U.S. especially, or Australia, or some farmers in Canada and New Zealand, they were sharing, they were advocating for agriculture. And I got tired of sharing and I was like, why isn't anybody in Latin America or even Spanish in Spain doing this? There was nothing in Spanish. So I said, I can do it. And I started it. While I was in bed recovering from the accident, it was, you know, it was the right time to do it. And now I'm 3 years in, 30,000 followers, and I'm very happy with it.
You've traveled around and I'm no doubt have witnessed and toured other dairies, probably here in the U.S. What's the biggest difference between dairying in Mexico and the U.S.?
Well, to signal one big difference is kind of hard, because in the U.S., farmers are very privileged in the sense of you guys have a lot of support from the government, and people, any farmer would just love to get that. And in Mexico, we struggle a lot because I don't own a big farm, but we're very high tech and we have been investing five generations to be better at our work without subsidies. But I see other smallholder dairy farmers in Mexico in the rural areas that are getting a lot of subsidies, but not necessarily advancing. So that disparity, I think that's the big difference between us. Here, every dairy farmer is can get help, can get subsidies, whereas in Mexico, it depends on who you are, where you are, and how you're doing. So that's the big difference. So, you know, to state the difference inside a country, that's the first thing that it's different. We do have difference. Maybe you don't so much.
Yeah. What do you find to be your greatest challenges in dairying where you are?
Right now, looking into the future, and I know that that might be a concern for everybody in the world, because there, you might know, we had elections in Mexico in July, and we have 1 month more until they get into office. So right now, I wish we had a little bit more clarity what this government really is going to do for the next six years at least, because I think they're going to stay in power a little bit longer than that. So what I would love to have right now is clarity, because we want to keep investing in our farms, but in order to do that, we need a little bit of stability maybe, so that we know when to go to the bank and ask for a loan. You know, because I'm happy to ask for money and pay back. You know, I don't want anything for free. I can work for myself to pay back, and I'm glad to do that. But doing it on a stable situation is kind of hard, because you cannot plan ahead. And everything that we do in the farm, everything that we buy, that we need, everything is priced in U.S. dollars. So the instability not knowing what's going to happen, it raises prices just automatically. So to have clarity would be amazing right now.
You were here for a second time, I think, you took part in the global farmer discussions. What was your impression of that, and what did you take away from that?
Well, this year, and as well as 2 years ago that I was here for the first time, it's amazing that no matter what type of farmer you are and no matter what part of the world you're in, our struggles are the same. We all worry about weather. You know, that's a given thing. But we also worry about our future, because we want to have our farms to be better so that we can pass it on you know, I'm fifth generation. So somebody did pass it on to me and to my brother and my dad right now. And we want to keep going forward. And I see people wanting that. And everybody wants to move forward. And that means we need better technology to do that. We need access to capital and financing. And we need access to the consumers to find ways to communicate better with them, engage better with them. We need access to our government offices and policymakers' offices to say, hey, I think your policy is wrong right this way. You can help us right, like doing this a little bit differently. We need access to all of these tools and channels that maybe will help us deliver, ultimately, better food for all the world.
Let's talk about trade. Just recently, there was the new agreement that was reached between the U.S. and Mexico, and now Canada seems to be a part of that as well. What are your opinions on trade between the U.S. and Mexico?
Well, I'm glad that the deal didn't break up, disappear, because it's not only about inputs. We depend on the U.S., in my farm particularly, and a lot of other farms, on the U.S. production of corn, because we buy a lot of it. And my cows eat American corn and Mexican corn as well. So that interaction, you know, is so basic but so necessary that I'm so glad that the new NAFTA is a real thing. I know that there are things that need to be I don't know how to say it, like detailed or rethinked, you know, because I feel that the negotiations were a little bit rushed because of timing everywhere. They got delayed because of elections in Mexico, and then they got pushed very quickly because elections in the U.S. mid-November. So I think there are things that can be improved, changed, or just eliminate them. But I'm thinking that if this is an initial deal that could be revised in 6 years, that I believe that's the plan, we could have a grasp of what it means, how it's affecting farmers in either side of the border, because eventually I think there will be affectations. I don't know if that's a word, sorry. But if it's going to be revised, I think that is a good thing to be talking about it and have the will to go back and see the document and say, okay, this is the original document, this is the situation out there, let's do a better document, because it's only paper, but you have to put it on paper and make policies out of it. But I'm optimistic that we can go forward and still work together, because like I said, and it's not only inputs, I also depend on maybe medicines that are made here, and technology and software, and there's a lot of things behind that we rely on trade.